Jason, the Bears didn't play very well, did something special at the end, and beat a losing team. No, this is not a rerun. This is just another Sunday in Bearsland. We'll talk about that and more coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. It's Jason Leisure. Jason, you and I are sitting in the press box at US Bank Stadium where the Bears just won 19-17 against the Minnesota Vikings team that for about 3.5 quarters looked absolutely dead and still almost pulled it out. This is a lot like the Raider game. This is a lot like so many of the games the Bears have played this season where they needed to score in the last 2 minutes to win.
It's five times where this season now, half their games, Patrick, where the game has come down to the final minute or so.
Yep.
And the Bears have won all of those.
It's crazy.
They are a team that historically is kind of the Washington Generals, kind of a punchline for losing, finding all kinds of ways to lose. And yet every time it's been scary this year, they have emerged. It starts with the blocked field goal by Josh Blackwell against the Raiders. The game-winning field goal by the practice squad kicker against the Commanders. Right. Caleb Williams' last-minute touchdown pass against the Bengals. It was like a minute six left when he ran for the game-winning touchdown against the Giants. And now this, it looked like it was over or pretty, dire at minimum when the Vikings finally take the lead on that 15-yard touchdown pass from McCarthy to Jordan Addison with 50 seconds left. But it really was, the offense struggled. The defense was very good with the assistance of J.J. McCarthy until the end, and it was their special teams that won it for them.
Yeah, after their special teams almost lost it for them. Earlier in the game, the Bears had a missed field goal by Cairo Santos that really would have put this thing away, and I'm looking through my notes here. But, I mean, to me, there were about four or five different moments, and in this case, it's a lot like some of these more recent wins where the Bears are one play away from just putting this thing away. And, you know, for me, the biggest moment there was when Tyreek Stevenson collides with Jaquan Brisker when they're both going after a J.J. McCarthy pass that could best be described as, what, a shallow pop fly.
Yeah.
They collide, and then, you know, rather than having an interception, two of the Bears' better players have to limp off the field. Tyreek Stevenson comes back for one snap, but that's it. And then, you know the Vikings get a little bit of life. The Bears entered the fourth quarter up 16-3. That felt a lot like when they were up 17-6 to start the fourth quarter of the first game between these two teams. They did so because Cairo Santos had missed a field goal. That was
long.
Yeah, a long one. And then the defense that had been really good all day couldn't hold. The Bears, here, I've got the notes in front of me. With 3:21 to go, the Bears have got 4th and 5 at the 43. You and I are debating whether they should go for it. They decide to get to the line of scrimmage and do the thing that never works for anybody ever when they try and get the Vikings to jump off sides.
It sometimes works against the Bears.
Sometimes
historically.
Does.
Not as much this year.
You can't blame them in practice. The previous possession for the Bears, by the way, it ended when Cairo missed a 45-yard field goal. Yeah. That would have given the Bears a 19-10 lead. So all of a sudden, the Bears decide to punt the ball away, they're up 16-10. The Vikings get the ball at the 15 coming out. When the Vikings get the ball, Jason, at that time, J.J. McCarthy had zero completions in the second half. At that time, J.J. McCarthy had a passer rating, I think, of 16.
Going into the final drive?
Going into the final drive.
14.9.
And, of course, all he does is march them down the field, including converting on a 4th and 4 pass to keep them alive. The drive ends with, as you said, a 15-yard touchdown pass to Jordan Addison, and all of a sudden you're the Bears, and you're about to lose your second game to a division rival whose quarterback has played like the worst quarterback in football, really, for most of those two games.
And you're in big trouble because offensively, Caleb Williams didn't have a great game at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the rushing yards were hard to come by. DeAndre Swift, I think, ended up 90, 91 yards, somewhere around there. But he got a lot of that at the end. It was really tough running for most of the game. So you're sitting there saying, well, there's 50 seconds left and 3 timeouts, but almost nothing's working offensively today.
And then you know what worked, Jason? Something that hadn't really worked all day, which was special teams. Devin Duvernay takes the kickoff at the goal line on the left-hand side as you are coming out. Kind of, you know, runs up and around and gets a great block by Josh Blackwell kind of on the right flank and starts sprinting up the right sideline. He gets chased down eventually, but when he does, he's at the Vikings 40. And Cairo Santos was saying after the game that realistically, he could have kicked anything from 61 yards in.
In this stadium.
In this stadium, on the turf, whatever. So the Bears, for all intents and purposes, are in field goal range without running an offensive
play. Right
there,
thanks to Devin Duvernay.
They're kicking a 58-yard field goal minimum. And all the Bears did was turn around and hand the ball off to DeAndre Swift for four. Then he lost two. And it's 3rd and 8 at the 38, and the Bears are looking at, again, a 56-yard field goal if things don't go right. And on 3rd and 8, they hand the ball off to DeAndre Swift. He gets almost all he needs, gets about a half yard short of the first down marker. And then rather than take a timeout and go for it on 4th and half a yard from the 31, the Bears let the clock tick all the way down, bang a timeout, and with 4 seconds left, snap the ball. Cairo Santos puts it through the uprights. That's, you know, for a team that finds creative ways to win late, this was a new one.
And now you sit here, I mean, we can look, dial more into some things like Caleb Williams' performance in the defense and J.J. McCarthy, but you sit here and you look at this and you say, it's ugly. Ben Johnson used that word to describe this game, and Ben Johnson has regularly described some of these wins as not real artistic, but they do count. The bottom line is you're 7-3, however you got there. And I think you try to make sense of this in the big picture, and it's like, are the Bears a great team? Are they as good as some of the other teams that are 7-3? No. They're a team that's in transition, that has a young quarterback trying to merge with a first-year head coach and offensive play caller. This could be, you could be making progress in some areas that you need to and be sitting here 4-6.
Right.
3-7. And have everybody kind of know, well, it's going to be till next year. And I think that might kind of be true anyway, but you happen to be getting wins along the way, and there are no footnotes on this in the standings. You right now are 7-3. That equals the number of wins like from Matt Eberflus's best season.
Yep.
The Bears are on the brink of, if they win an eighth game, that's the most, that'll match the most they've had since 2018. Mm-hmm. We're recording this Sunday late afternoon. If you listen to this Monday morning, it's possible, depending on what happens in the Lions-Eagles game Sunday night, the Bears could wake up in sole possession of first place in the NFC North. They are, regardless of that, firmly in the playoff hunt,
right,
the playoff field with 7 games left. That's an amazing place to be for them in mid-November.
Something the Chicago Bears typically haven't been is fun. And, you know, even though some of these games are ugly and maybe you don't have the amount of offensive output or really crisp play that you'd like, this is fun. Like a team that's 7-3 and you've got your quarterback saying afterwards, like, we haven't even scratched the surface of offensively of what we need to
because
be doing.
Because they haven't. They have not.
And you know, nonetheless, like they're finding ways to win even against bad teams. And I was telling – we were having a conversation in the elevator going down, Jason. Like, I might be coming around to the idea of, like, who's good? You know, we sit there and, right, and wait till they play good teams. Who would that be? Detroit? Philadelphia? The Packers, who just struggled to beat the Giants? Like, maybe there are no dominant teams in the NFC this year, and maybe this is an ideal year for the Bears to steal a couple and put together a really fun December and January. I don't think anybody sits here and thinks that they're going to be playing in the Super Bowl or NFC title game. But boy, if you know they could provide some entertainment in the first round of the playoffs. Like, geez, that is 2 steps more than I thought they would take this year.
Yeah, and we'll see what those other teams are by the time they arrive, and we'll see what the Bears are by the time they get to those points in the schedule. What's Pittsburgh going to be next week? It's kind of hard to say. The Packers, you're right. That's another team where it's like, what exactly are they going to be? The 49ers, same thing. And where will the Bears be? And that, I think, is why – that is the biggest reason that I would be high on what the Bears are doing right now is I don't think this is smoke and mirrors. I don't think this is all in for one shot and they're 7-3. I think they are prioritizing long term over short term and happen to be pulling out wins in the short term. I think that this is a team that still has a long way to go, a lot of improvement that can happen. And that's, I'm saying that, Pat, as kind of a positive outlook on where they're headed, not a negative one. They're well short of what they could be, which the flip side of that is they can become a lot better. I don't know what team this will be a month from now, going into the final three or four games of the season. If things improve, if Caleb Williams especially takes off, that's your biggest source of potential improvement.
Yeah, and geez, if you throw Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon, and TJ Edwards onto this defense in December, you know, I mean, that's, you know,
we have a chance.
We've talked about the defense for 6 weeks now about Jason being like, there are no easy fixes here. You know, what gives you optimism that the defense is going to get better? I think those three guys do right now. And Ben Johnson's declaration Friday that Jalen Johnson was returning to practice. Now, I think we both think it's going to take a couple weeks. But just getting him on that runway is, I think, something to look forward to.
It's still way sooner than we thought.
No.
I don't think we've talked. We haven't talked since they did that. There was the way Jalen Johnson was talking when this originally happened in September, 2 months ago, it sounded very plausible he'd miss the rest of the season. Or he'd come back so late that it wouldn't really matter. Them putting on the table that he would return to practice now, and I mean, to me, that at least cracks the door open, Patrick, on could he play by the end of the month?
Yeah.
If they're opening that practice window, could he play by the time they go to Philly on Black Friday, for example? And I think that they have to activate him no later than the following week.
Which is the Packers. Yeah, which is going to be a huge game for
him. At Green Bay, I believe. And, of course, they can, if he's not ready, they can activate him anyway and make him inactive on game days and whatever. But I don't think they would crack the door open on this now if they didn't, on the practice window, if they didn't think it was possible he would return within those 21 days. And then, like, you know, we kind of shrugged this off as silly, but the fact that they put him questionable on the injury report for the Minnesota game, I think it at least tells you they think he's doing pretty well physically.
Yeah.
There was no chance he was going to
They ruled him out, you know, at 1 o'clock on Saturday.
But the idea that you would even put him as questionable on Friday indicated you're thinking it's going to be relatively soon that he's back.
It's hard to parse how much of today was good defense and how much was bad J.J. McCarthy, because there was a lot of that. J.J. finished 16 of 32 for 150 yards, a touchdown, two picks, and a passer rating of 47. Caleb Williams now wasn't much better. He was also 16 of 32, 193 yards, no picks, no interceptions, or no touchdowns, no interceptions, passer rating of 68.9. Neither of those are acceptable quarterback performances. And I think both of them were really done in by drops, again, for the second straight
week. Caleb's best throw of the game was this throw out of, not his own end zone, but close, to DJ Moore. 20-yard, it would have been a 20-yard gain or so. And DJ Moore, at one point in the catch, I mean, it hits him square in the chest. It's on dead on target. He's got both hands on it, and it's pressed against his, like, chin.
Yeah.
How does that ball come out?
Right.
But it does bobble its way out for an incomplete pass. And Caleb, to his credit, made up for it on the next play with, a 24, 25-yard pass to Colston Loveland. The difference to me between Caleb and McCarthy, and you're looking at a game that was decided on a kick return and a field goal at the end in a two-point game. So there can't be too much of a difference between how they played. But a key difference, while Caleb did not play great, this is a very nondescript, forgettable performance by him, he avoided the just catastrophic mistakes that McCarthy couldn't avoid.
Right.
Caleb did not have any turnovers. They had a botched handoff with him and Swift that Romo Dunze covered up for them, and they survived. He took two sacks, but neither of them was particularly consequential. And on the other side, McCarthy throws an interception deep in his own end that gives the Bears points, and throws an interception going into his own end zone right before halftime that costs his team points.
Yeah, and the one into his own end zone at halftime was pretty cool. It was Deshaun Wright The Bears corner uses every inch of the 6'4" that he is. By the way, tied for the tallest cornerback in the history of football, by the way.
In the history of
You know, leaps, picks the ball off, and then gathers with his teammates just beyond the end zone, and they all take a knee for a minute. And the reason they did it is because his junior college coach, who was coach at Laney College in Oakland, was shot and killed this week. And
John Beam.
And he was close enough with John that John came out for the Saints game. Because do you remember that Nashawn Wright's brother plays corner for New Orleans?
Okay.
So Beam came out and spent the night before the game walking up and down the Magnificent Mile with Nashawn Wright because he needed to get his steps in. So they spent hours just wandering around the city and just talking about anything but football. And, you know, Wright was pretty broken up, justifiably so. He was made an honorary captain today, in part because of that, and in part because, remember, he was a practice squad guy on the Vikings who couldn't get on the game day roster. And to talk to him after the game, and we'll have something in the Sun-Times about it, was sobering, but also, like, you know, good for him. You know, he talked about how important the coach was in his life and how important it was that he was able to do something today to pay tribute a little bit.
Nashawn Wright's been a great story this season for the Bears. A guy who, like you said, was a cast-off from the Cowboys and then the Vikings. And his former coach from the Cowboys, Al Harris, spoke up for him and said, this is a guy who's you should give him a chance. And, you know, his whole roots of playing for John Beam was a guy that just needed... Nashawn Wright needed a chance. He needed somebody that would give him a chance and help him.
And he was playing receiver and got moved from receiver to corner while at junior college. Yeah. He, you know, he's not in the NFL unless that happens.
It's got to be a really just, I would think, one of the most meaningful days of Nashawn Wright's career to do that coming out of that tragedy.
Yeah, and then, you know, you talk to Kevin Byard afterwards. Kevin Byard goes like, hey, like, let's be honest. Like, Nashawn Wright wasn't supposed to play for this team. Like, he was there as depth. And he fought his way up. And remember, he was impressive in the offseason program.
Yeah. But when they signed him, you would have had him on your list of guys that aren't going to make the roster.
Exactly.
Let alone that he'd be a starter.
And the only reason he jumped out, I think, to either of us was, you know, in the offseason was you go out there and you'd be like, my God, I've never seen a corner look like him before.
Yeah. And you just, you kind of gauge what the coaching staff sees in him. And he earned that trust from Dennis Allen fast.
Right.
I mean, it was really quick. Dennis Allen saw, okay, I can roll with this guy.
And remember, part of it, too, was because Jalen Johnson missed all of training camp with the groin injury, Jason. Like, Nashawn Wright got a lot of reps because Jalen was hurt. And then, you know, in a way, it's, you know, it's almost been like he's been preparing since July to be the starter, even though we didn't think of it that way because of the chances that he received. Jason, do you have any issue with Cairo Santos? Today, it's, you know, missing a – and I think there's a portion of the Bears fan base that every time Cairo misses a field goal, they're ready to fire him. I thought today was kind of what makes Cairo really, really good, is that, you know, he may screw up in the middle of the game, but he usually doesn't screw up at the end.
He's good under pressure.
Yep.
The thing – I mean, it's kind of both sides of the ledger here with Cairo Santos, and it's challenging, I understand, for Bears fans – even if they like Cairo, that when you turn on other games, you see in these guys bomb 55, 58, what's the long? 68-yard field. I mean, you're seeing long field goals everywhere, and there's times where if you're the Bears, boy, like that punt from midfield, I mean, some teams can try a field goal in that scenario, I believe.
Right.
You. That's the trade-off with Cairo Santos, is he doesn't have that distance. He's on the other side of it. Great under pressure. We've seen that. He's been their kicker for 5 years now. Is this his sixth season, actually?
I think so when you count his first stint.
Well, no. I think it's his sixth season consecutively, actually. 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. He's great under pressure, and he's the best ever at Soldier Field, which is the hardest place to kick. So if at some point you just sit here and you're kind of pretend GM on the couch or pretend GM reporter behind your laptop like me or you, and you say, I just have had it with Cairo Santos, I've had it that we can't kick 68 yard field goals with this guy, okay, you can find someone that can do that, but can that person deliver for you at crunch time, and can that person deliver for you at treacherous Soldier Field, which is right, we're getting right into horrible Soldier Field kicking season right now.
What did Chris Tabor?
Cairo can do that for you.
What did Chris Tabor used to call it? Was it kick return season when the weather got cold? Cairo hit a 54-yarder today, Jason. That gave him sole possession of the all-time Bears record for the most 50-plus yard field goals ever, passing Robbie Gould. But, you know, I wrote about
he's pretty accurate on the 50-plus. He's just not giving you 60-plus.
Well, and the other thing is the people who talk about, well, like, let's give Jake Moody a chance. Like, have you seen Jake Moody from deep? It's not good.
Yeah.
And I wrote about this a little bit in the Saturday paper. Cairo is a golfer. He's a golfer. And he looks at the guys who are kicking 68-yarders indoors or in hot weather as playing desert golf. You hit it long, you hit it straight. Good things are going to happen. And he thinks of himself playing Whistling Straits, which is up in Wisconsin, on Lake Michigan. And when you've got rain spinning in your face and wind coming off the lake. And, you know, it's just a different mindset. And he said, you know, it's a different club. And, you know, and he meant club as in golf club, not as in group of people. And I think that for what the Bears need at this time of year going forward, I think Cairo Santos is I would hesitate to move off of Cairo Santos, and I don't think they will, obviously.
If you're in a situation where you have the option in a domed stadium to kick a 60-yarder, do you want Cairo Santos or do you want somebody else? You probably want somebody else.
That's cool.
That's not Cairo's forte.
If they ever build a domed stadium, we can have that conversation.
Sure. You're right. But let me throw you this hypothetical. You're kicking up 37-yard field goal at Soldier Field in December.
Right.
Who do you want?
Yeah,
because there's a lot of guys that miss that.
Right.
There's a lot of guys that are going to miss a 35 to 40-yard field goal at Soldier Field when the weather is horrible. And Cairo is not. Cairo is right at about 90% in his career. Again, best ever by any kicker at Soldier Field, even Robbie Gould.
Now, you could be frustrated with Richard Hightower. You could be frustrated with the punt return they gave up, which was at an opportunity where we're all sitting there going, all the Bears have to do is not screw up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Vikings defense was so bad, or offense was so bad, that you're sitting there going, just the Bears, started the fourth quarter, Bears just have to hold serve. And literally four plays into the fourth quarter, the Vikes get a punt return for 43 yards, gives them the ball at the 24 going in. They score two plays later, and all of a sudden they have life.
You give life to a quarterback who, J.J. McCarthy, like we'd said, 14.9 passer rating going into their final drive. Pat, at that point, that doesn't even do it justice. At that point, he's 10 for 24
right.
for 74 yards and two interceptions. That you close out that quarterback.
Right. Do you? Let's talk about them real quick before we get out of here. I turned to somebody today and I said, you know, Sam Darnold was a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're the Vikings and you have to do this thing that the Bears are doing. And I wrote about this in the Sun-Times. The Bears trying to do this too, where trying to win now, trying to maximize the prime of the weapons you have. But you also have a quarterback that you need to develop and you need to play him so he can keep getting better. If I were a Vikings fan right now, I would be damn concerned about the future of the quarterback here. And it's not because J.J. needs to be good in his fifth game.
It was his fifth career start.
It would be silly to assume that he would have it all figured out. But by walking away from a quarterback who is now one of, what, shortlist MVP candidate this
Sam
year?
Sam Darnold good again this year for Seattle, yeah.
Yeah.
The Vikings fixed him and now are letting another team reap the benefits.
Right, and they have such a well-rounded roster otherwise. They have really exciting edge
rushers. Scary playmakers.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison.
They have Harrison Smith.
Naylor, Aaron Jones.
Yeah, Harrison Smith made his 200th appearance for the Vikes today. Do you know how many Bears have ever done that?
No. Who?
One.
Who's
one.
It?
Guess.
Forte?
No.
No?
More of a specialist.
Who? Patrick Scales?
Almost. Halfway there.
That doesn't count, does it?
Halfway there.
Pat O'Donnell?
No.
Tell me who it is.
Give me one more Patrick who plays for the Bears.
Patrick Manley?
There we go.
All right.
Yeah, Manley is, what, 220 and change. But, yeah, they, you know, when you look at their offense and, you know, Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and, you know, Jordan Mason and, I mean, Aaron Jones, these are all, like...
They've got a team that's largely built to win now.
These are all, like, veteran professionals. And to surround them with a young quarterback who can really torpedo any Sunday if he plays poorly. Boy, that's a weird place to be at this
point. You have to err on the side of J.J. McCarthy gets more time.
Of course you do.
It's his fifth career start Sunday. I can't... I mean, now granted, he should be probably a little further along than someone else making their fifth career start because he had the whole year to learn.
Yeah.
But there is a limit to how much you can learn when you're not actually on the field, in the game speed, making those decisions on the fly. That's the only thing practically that Caleb Williams got out of his rookie season.
Right.
Is just the experience. He knows what it's like to look at these defenses. He knows what a collapsing pocket feels like in the NFL. He knows what a free runner in the NFL looks like. He knows some of what defensive coordinators and very crafty defensive backs are going to do to try to trick him. He's got some of that, even if, as Ben Johnson told us going into the season, basically nothing about how he was coached carries over to what I'm doing right now with him.
Yeah.
J.J. McCarthy doesn't have any of that. Give him some time. But to your point, because you're at that stage with him, you are undercutting a roster. The Vikings are now 4-6. I mean, they're not. It's going to be very difficult to make the playoffs from 4-6 this late in the season. They're undercutting a roster that is pretty much otherwise built to compete now.
Yeah, yeah, and makes you wonder. You know, when they had talks apparently with Aaron Rodgers this past off season, and with others, how close they were.
Gosh, Pat, if they were willing to do that, why would they not have been willing to just keep Darnold? Did they not have the money for it? Were they too far over the cap?
I don't know. The contract that the Seahawks gave Darnold was huge, but there was an out after 1 year. So it's just an expensive rental if they want it to be that. And obviously, they don't right now. Jason, I think that'll do it from here. We will be back later in the week. Aaron Rodgers, speaking of the devil, is coming, provided that he's healthy, is coming to Soldier Field on Sunday.
I believe he has retained his ownership of the Bears, even though he hasn't played them. I think he kept it. I don't think he sold it to private equity or anything like that.
He left with a busted left hand today. Did not return, actually. I am curious.
Against the Bengals?
Yeah, I'm curious to see whether or what the reports are as we go through the week, because you would think that with a busted left hand, he can still do whatever he wants, right?
Well, I don't think he can do whatever he wants fully healthy. It would have probably been a good thing for the Bears if Aaron Rodgers had stayed, if Green Bay had hung on to him, because Jordan Love, for all the... We were laughing about this today, you and I, during the game, about how Packers fans have just gone crazy with their impatience. A notoriously patient fan base has got so little tolerance for Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love, who, you would think, if you didn't watch any games and you didn't look at the stats or anything and you just were listening, you're like, wow, there must be a disaster there. The Packers must be losing, and Jordan Love must be horrible. The Packers are doing fine.
Right.
Jordan Love has a 100-plus passer rating for the season. I think that the Bears would have been better off if old, broken Aaron Rodgers had stayed the Green Bay quarterback. And by the way, how old is he, 40? That's in no way an insult at Aaron Rodgers.
No.
That's normal. Everybody, I think, saw Tom Brady play into his mid-40s and thought, well, oh, everybody can do this now. No, that's the outlier. Look at all these guys. Patrick, you know, Peyton Manning, Philip Rivers, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees. What do? They all break down in their late 30s or so because that's the most normal thing that could happen to a person, to an athlete. And that's what's happened with Aaron Rodgers.
Except for Tom Brady, who doesn't eat strawberries, and because of that, he's good.
And he doesn't get sunburned because he drinks so much water.
Okay, Aaron Rodgers turns 42 on December 2nd. Also of note, Caleb Williams, 24, on Monday.
Oh.
Happy birthday to Caleb.
Aren't Caleb Williams' favorite quarterbacks Aaron Rodgers and Matt Stafford?
Yeah. I think it's Aaron Rodgers, and then I think the Bears told him that he should watch Matt Stafford's footwork. I think that was the... That was the scouting report, I remember.
They might also have told him, don't talk about Aaron Rodgers. We don't know.
That would check out. That would check out. Anyway, big week coming up. Jason, we will be back at it in the interim. You can check Jason and I out on the Sun-Times website. Check us out on social media and pick up a paper if you can. He's Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.